the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
Yeah, so one of the first things I did was I rolled off my four-hour CKLW retrospective onto digital for the first time and varied the speed and all that to make it sound normal again, which is, wow, I've never heard that not sounding like it was being done by chipmunks. So, yeah, so there's some, well, that's just old CKLW, yeah. CKOC. Oh, my God, all these tapes that I just want to, Pat Holiday at CKLW, Brother Bill Gable, all the yeah, I plan on bringing back my youth, but
this is the Sound Off podcast with Matt Kundle. Broadcast talk in Sound Off mode.
We are live to a hard drive, and this week we head out east. And by east, we're going to Halifax. J.C. Douglas is going to join me shortly, and we are going to talk Halifax and radio life on the East Coast. There are some incredible stories you may have only heard about in passing, or ones that you've completely forgotten about, but they need to be told again. And that's why we do this podcast. The Sound Off podcast is brought to you in part by the new cloud-based paperless studio system, PromoSuite Next. For over 25 years, you've known PromoSuite as radio's original promotions management system, helping promotions teams and programmers manage their contest winners, liners, sales requests, remotes, prize fulfillment, and much more. Today, over 2,500 radio stations across the United States and Canada use PromoSuite Next to control the chaos, reduce paper, and reclaim the time you really want to spend creating great radio concepts. To learn more, go to promosuite.com/soundoff. They will be at Canadian Music Week, and later on in the show, I'm going to confirm all that.
Rock and roll, like it ought to be. Q104.
Hi, this is Tommy Lee from Motley Crue, and you're listening to Dr. Feelgood on Q104, Dartmouth, the rock of the Atlantic. Dartmouth. Oh, Dartmouth. Okay, Dartmouth. Okay.
Sorry about that, everybody.
Hi, this is Tommy Lee from Motley Crue, and you're listening to Dr. Feelgood on Q104, Dartmouth, the rock of the Atlantic. So crank it up!
A few weeks ago, I was in Halifax, and I was headed to the airport at 5:30 in the morning to catch a flight home. Anybody who knows Halifax knows that it's a pretty long trip, rivaled only by Edmonton. Well, there I was listening to J.C. Douglas with Peter and Melody on C100. And it dawned on me, I haven't had anyone from the Maritimes on this podcast yet. Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Florida, Fort McMurray, Edmonton. We've had two people on from Arizona, three episodes from California, New York, Detroit, Ottawa, Seattle. Oh, you get the picture. Well, it took to episode 44 and we finally have a guest on from the Maritimes. And I should be just a little embarrassed considering I worked there for four solid radio years. Here's the next thing. I have never met J.C. Douglas until this interview. I worked up in the Annapolis Valley about 60 miles from Halifax, but our paths never crossed. And in the subsequent radio years, we didn't meet at Canadian Music Week or anywhere else along the way. We had only followed one another's career through the trades and the internet. Today's the day. I finally got in touch with him on FaceTime. Yes, FaceTime, where we talk radio and Halifax. What were the early days of Q104 like?
You know what? I regret in a way that I wasn't there for most of the first 2 years because that was an unbelievable time. And I've chronicled it. I've been I became its historian, put together a massive documentary on the history of the station in those first 2 years under Brother Jake, under Bro Jake, were pretty amazing. He did at one point offer me a job. And I turned it down because I'd already accepted a gig in Bridgewater, my first radio gig, and also because Jeff Woods was being courted by both Bro Jake at Q104 and by Q107 at the same time, straight out of college. We were both Fanshawe College grads. And so I thought probably best for me not to accept the same job that he was kind of trying to keep a foot in the door of. So I didn't accept Jake's offer. I got to Q 3 months after he had left. And really, we were on the upsweep towards the social acceptability at that point. The total rebelliousness of the Brother Jake Edwards years were behind at that point. Not that we didn't still have rebelliousness in our nature, but the Jake years were the amazing start to Q104.
I was very amazed. I started listening to the station in 1988. The station is not even 5 years old at that time. And it was a remarkable radio station. There was really nothing like it, really, to Toronto. There was no other rock station really of that caliber until you got to Q107 in Toronto, because Shome was a progressive station, and there's really nothing in between. So it was absolutely remarkable that you could do a rock station in a town that's as conservative as Halifax. Is that fair to say that Halifax is rather conservative and Q104 has always been avant-garde?
Yeah, and I'm probably underselling what it was we were still doing. I mean, Jake really set a creative bar that you felt that you really needed to meet. The thing about being a rock station in a conservative market, I've always thought, well, there are non-conservative people in every market, and those are the people who are coming to your radio station. So we targeted them, and it was a small segment of the audience at first. You look back at those early ratings books for Q104, and they weren't very impressive, but they bred an incredibly loyal core that stayed, and many of whom are probably still with the with that station today. It's, you know, we built it from the bottom of the pack to number one in the market, and it's still number one today.
So I do the drive from Halifax up to Wolfville. It's an hour. Going to Halifax, can't remember what trouble I would get up into. And then driving home one day, the record company delivers the wrong Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young guitar to Q104. It's supposed to go to C100, but it's obviously a prize to be given away.
That's right.
And you got the guitar. Do you remember what you did with that guitar?
That must have been like 1987-ish?
Actually, it was 1989, but he's on a roll, so I am not going to derail that train.
Man, you've got memories. You're bringing back... My life is flashing before my eyes. What did we do with that guitar? Right, it was for C100, and somehow they delivered it to us, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash were playing the Metro Center that night. We called C100's control room up and told them we had taken that guitar hostage. And John Trivett was the announcer at C100, who's a great guy. I ran into him in St. John at a St. John Sea Dogs game in New Brunswick, last year. And we laughed about this. It was very kind of him. And we aired him taking our phone call, and we just put on voices like, yeah, we got your shiny guitar, and we ran some sound effects that we were busting the guitar live on the air. That's what we did. Yeah, we busted it up real good. We actually didn't. We sent it over to C100, our compliments, and but we had some fun with it on the air, and they thought that we did some nasty stuff to our competitor. So it was fun.
That bit lasted the whole drive from Halifax to Wolfville, and I was screaming in hysterics at how funny that was.
Oh my God!
Did you?
Yeah, we became really good at driving stuff into the ground.
That's absolutely phenomenal bit, and I absolutely loved it.
You know, that's the creativity especially the early days of Q104, that Brother Jake, you know, he wanted you to just take something. And Hal Harbour, Doug Barron, you know, would have been solidly behind that kind of spirit of radio, which was just make something out of nothing, run with it, make it as big as possible, make as much noise as possible, get people talking about you. And that's, I loved doing that stuff.
You were doing afternoon drive and then program director. And when you were program director, right up to 2011, 2012, there were some pretty cutting edge promotions involving Russian mail order brides. Is there a promotion that stands out in your mind as being, you know, the one or the one that's most memorable?
Certain ones come back to haunt me. But so the one you're talking about is the mail is in the check, right?
Right.
That one kind of got away on us. But, you know, sometimes the best promotions start with a good title. And if you've got a good, you know, name for it, you just kind of, you know, backfill it from there. And Steve Jones, our director of programming or vice president of programming at NewCap, we were batting around a name and we had come to the check is in the mail. And then he came back with the mail is in the check. And it was like, oh, now we have to do this. So really that particular promotion was one of the tamest things we ever did. The actual on-air execution of it. Basically, it was just a dating game thing where we were working with a dating site out of the Czech Republic. And it was a pretty legit dating site. So we just added sort of an edgy dressing to it, and they happened to still use one of their URLs for their site involved the words mail order brides. That gave us a legitimacy to being able to use that terminology, but it really wasn't anything. But the public made a huge deal out of human trafficking and stuff like that, which it had nothing to do with. So it certainly became a news story. And anybody listening to the radio station just said, oh, that's kind of a cute promotion. It's just a dating game thing. But we had people storming the radio station with placards and stuff like that. And it got us a lot of attention, which is what we were looking for in the first place. But woo, sometimes in the social media world, it's really hard to do anything that is going to drum up any amount of real, you know, intense controversy, because there's a certain segment of the audience that now knows that the first thing they're going to do is go straight for your advertisers. Luckily, that took a while for them to organize fully, but I think now they're ready to go on a moment's notice. So I know that station that I'm no longer with has a tougher time doing that kind of promotion.
And then there was the 2010 case where someone in Newfoundland heard Dire Straits' Money for Nothing on the radio and didn't like a part of it. Yeah, that part. You might remember Terry Evans from episode 22 in our series. He went to the wall for that song on K97 in Edmonton. Out east, it was J.C. Douglas and Q104 that led the charge in protesting the Canadian Broadcast Standard Council's dumb decision to ban the song 25 years after its release.
And you know what? That was in response to a CBSC decision against Oz FM in St. John's. We were probably the most vocal of the stations that picked up the mantle there, because St. John's Oz FM just said, yeah, okay, fine, thank you for the ruling, and they didn't have much to say about it. We just thought it was a pretty ridiculous ruling. But it really came down to a technicality more than just simply sticking up for the artist's right to free speech. You really had to take a look at what was in that ruling, and it was foolish for it to have come down the way it was. We protested, made a big noise about it, and eventually the CBSC overturned their decision. I think it was the only time they've ever done that, but it was for the right reasons. And we had great respect and response from like the LGBT community and stuff. So, you know, taking it to a on-air protest that got covered nationally, we had CBC's national newscast in our control room for like an hour that Friday night when we played the record continuously, and had people like Ashley McIsaac and a bunch of other people from the LGBT community on with us saying, yeah, no, we understand what you're doing and we support it. So that was pretty neat. And it was, you know, sometimes you have to pick up the mantle and say, yeah, what the hell? What's going on here?
More with J.C. Douglas in just a second. I still want to talk about his foray into late-night TV with David Letterman and Tom Snyder, and leaving Q104, then winding up with his old adversaries and new home at C100. The Sound Off podcast is brought to you by Promo Suite, and rather than me telling you all about Promo Suite again, I thought I'd just call CJ from Promo Suite himself.
Hey, Matt.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I actually just got finished listening to your most recent podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, funny timing. Yeah, of course.
So you're going to be at CMW?
Yeah, we'll be there. It'll be me and Rachel Fields walking around, causing some trouble.
What are you guys going to be talking about with Promo Suite?
We're going to be talking about Promo Suite next. Making sure that everybody knows it's there. A lot of Canadian stations are already using it, so we'll be catching up with those people also.
Well, you're a fixture there every year, and it's going to be good to see you again.
Absolutely. Can't wait.
First, it was you and I, Andrew, with our mugs caught on camera at The Tonight Show last summer. Then Anna Z and I at The Letterman Show, where I presented him with a special gift.
I don't need your love. I don't need your laughter. I don't need your applause. This look what some thoughtful audience member gave me earlier tonight. My own can of big-ass clams.
And this morning at about 20 to 2, here's how it sounded live on The Late Late Show with Tom Snyder.
The other night here, I jokingly said, wouldn't it be funny if we asked the viewers to send in lyrics for our theme song? I mean, it's a great theme song, and David Sanborn does a great job on this thing, but it's a little tough to imagine words to it. Well, it wasn't tough to a man named J.C. Douglas, who lives in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, who sent us an audio tape that we have married to our produced opening here. And without his permission, here is what it might sound like if this thing had words. Brian, roll it, please.
It's the Tomorrow Show without the Marlboros. Tom Snyder's on, and look at that, he's smoke-free. Perspiration drips from his upper lip. But gosh, Tom, great to have you back on Network TV.
Now, please, don't try to top it, okay? But my thanks to J.C. Douglas for going along with the gag up there in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, where they watch the show at 1:35 a.m. on Atlantic time, which is 1 to the east of Eastern time.
Yes, it's great to have you back on Network TV.
And you led Dave Sanborn on the work part there. That was cool.
By God, Andrew, what's left now? I think I can die in peace.
You did some television in the early 90s with Breakfast Television.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Television, yes. I did Breakfast Television for a little over a year back in 98, 99 with CTV locally here. And it was fun. It was like the most fun. I think it was the most fun gig I've ever had because it was just a playland every day for us.
25 catalogs, over 2,000 albums, 61,000 songs, 197,000 tracks. Megatrax has everything you need to create the perfect sounds for your station, podcast, or digital program. Our flagship catalog, Megatrax, has hundreds of albums covering a huge array of genres and styles. Deep East Music and No Sheet Music deliver international sounds straight out of London. Sensacion brings an authentic Latin flair to every album and is recorded live by local musicians. Megatrax also has a huge collection of FFX, sound design, and narration mixes to give you full creative freedom to make any type of production imaginable. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
My thanks to Nlogic for their continuing support of the show. They have a very useful webinar coming up that reveals more about how Canadians have adapted to the new normal brought on by the pandemic. It's largely going to deal with purchase behavior. Yes, we've all gotten strange with our money. Nlogic is going to be using the data they have collected with the help from Sales Pro and the Numeris RTS survey. They're going to do a deep dive into consumer behavior in Canada since COVID-19. Webinar takes place on March 6th. Sign up now at nlogic.ca. How have you always been so good at getting television to react to the things that you do? You just mentioned about the CBC and, yeah, and getting them to come down to, you know, to watch you just basically play a record over and over again. But you've had involvement with David Letterman. How did you get on David Letterman?
I've been a TV hound since I was a kid and a radio hound, and I just have always had a huge curiosity and a work ethic that's just driven me to get involved in everything I enjoy and getting behind the scenes and becoming a part of it. I'm hoping I do less of that as the years go by because it's exhausting trying to always make that happen. I sang the theme song for Tom Snyder's Late Late Show, and he recorded that and sent it to him, and he played it. He used it on the air and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just... I can't just let well enough alone. I put together a can of big ass clams back in the days when Dave Letterman was doing the big ass ham bit, and he used that as a running gag on the show. And myself and Anna Z from Q104, we got on camera for a bit, and it was just fun, and we were able to use it on the air after that as well. So all these things just became fodder for the strange things that we were doing on the air at Q104 as well. I don't know, it was just fun, and I just loved, I mean, Letterman, I adored. I mean, he was my idol, and so how could you go to his show without trying to become part of it, which is ridiculous, and I've gone several times since and never tried to be a part of it, but the first time around, it's like, yeah, hey, why not?
Something that's unusual in the Maritimes that I guess a lot of people in the rest of the country and really the rest of North America cannot identify with, and that's the Atlantic time zone. So Letterman, okay, right? Letterman is coming on at 1:30 in the morning, but back in the 90s when it was just the late show. I mean, it was okay for me. I would stay up and watch it at 1:30 in the morning, but how can you be a fan of a show? And then, you know, if you're doing mornings, you'd have to be up again, but you were doing afternoon drive at the time.
Yeah, and thank God for the advent of the VCR. It's funny because I remember when I was living in Ontario when Letterman's late night show first came on, and WGRZ in Buffalo inexplicably did not carry the first year or two of Letterman's late night show. And it was driving me insane because I was a huge fan of his and I wanted to see it. And we had no VCRs. We had no way of trading, you know, video. There was no YouTube. But once, you know, VCRs came along, hey, whatever, we could watch whatever, whenever. But, you know, same thing with Snyder's show. I remember getting a call at 2 a.m. from my on-air partner, Andrew Gillis, say, you know, going absolutely nuts, saying, he played your song, he played your song. You know, it's like, yeah, 2 in the morning. Nobody else would have heard it except us, but we brought it to the air the next afternoon and celebrated infiltrating another late-night comedy show.
Why did it all end at Q104 for you?
I had set a goal of programming for 15 years. Tops. I started when I was 35. I came back to program there, and I knew that it would be, I knew the way I am when it comes to a job such as programming, that it would be all encompassing. I would give it beyond my all. And so I figured, well, I don't want to do this beyond, let's set a goal of age 50. And so as I approached 50, I thought, I feel like I've pretty much done what I've wanted to do here, which included interviewing Paul McCartney. I think once I got the McCartney interview, the first thing I said after that ended, you know, on the air was, well, I can retire now. And I sort of felt that way, is that we'd done so many things programming wise, and we'd grown to the number one station in the market as well, which was obviously a goal for us. And I interviewed McCartney, which my friend Jeff Woods has not done. That's the one thing I have on Woodsy, is that I have interviewed McCartney. And it was time to look for something else. And so I decided a couple of things, to go back to my original love, which was just an on-air gig. And I was looking at doing something with NewCap on their 96.5 station, which was Cool FM at the time. They wound up changing format, and I guess I was not a part of the plan to work at the new format. But at the same time, I found a gig with 89.9 The Wave, doing an oldies format, 70s, 80s, 90s format, which was to my liking. I enjoyed the format, and I worked at that for a couple of years, and also then tried my hand at a real job. I went to work for Halifax Regional Police as a 911 operator and dispatch operator as well, which was really cool. Did that for almost 2 years, and thought, wow, this is what it's like to do a real job. This is hard. So so I came running back to radio as soon as I got an offer, a big offer, which I was happy and surprised to get from my old pals at C100.
You've worked at the two biggest radio stations in Halifax. Those stations have been predominantly one and two since about the beginning of time.
Yeah, and we're at each other's throats for years, at least figuratively. For Q104, C100 was a station that they perennially attacked on air because C100 had been, the market leader for so long. If I wanted to work at any other radio station in the market, it was definitely C100, just to do it, just to make that 180-degree turn in my career.
It feels like home, too.
Oh, you know what? It's amazing. It's such a completely different... So I like the fact that a few people's heads have exploded in town about the people always come up to me and say, I can't believe you're at C100. But you know what? As a human being, you have many different parts, many different facets, and it's fun to play a different kind of music. It's fun to talk to a different listener. Learning how to talk to a female demographic is a completely different animal altogether, and working with a great team, including our program director Brad Muir, general manager Trent McGrath. Now, those two guys have been friends of mine for literally a quarter of a century, and working with people on the team and the control, like particularly Peter Harrison, who's been with that show for over 30 years, and he's really taught me a lot about talking to the demographic, and it's been a really fun experience. Again, it was like completely going away and doing something different, like working for the police. This is kind of the same thing. It's a whole different experience, and I figure, I'm probably pretty late in my career. Why not do a few things that I never dreamed of doing? Doing the morning show at C100 is something I never dreamed of doing, but actually, doing a morning show full-time is something I'd never had on my resume. So just doing that alone has been such an incredible experience. I've loved it. I hope the audience feels the same way about me as I do about them. And so far, the ratings have been pretty good. So far, so good. We haven't been able to knock off that juggernaut at Q104, though.
In the first year, what did you learn the most about starting to do a heritage morning show on C100?
Well, doing a multi-person morning show to begin with was so different. Everything I've done on the air before was my own. And so working democratically, and they work so democratically, was a whole new thing to learn. But I had so many different aspects of the game to learn. I mean, just the way to converse to a mature female mother, like a parental audience, all that kind of thing, not taking for granted the kind of freedom that we'd had at Q104 to say whatever, whenever. I had to be responsible. I had to be a mature adult. I had to be the person that I sort of was in my personal life, but had never had to be in my professional life. And what an exercise in discipline that was. But I mean, all fun and all for the greater good. And it was so good when we felt it starting to click, which was pretty fast. It was almost immediately. And you could just feel that rhythm between us. And it was like, wow, this is really going to work. And, I started getting a response from your players that, we like you. This has got a real... They weren't sure how to respond at first because especially Moya Farrell, who's since left C100, she'd been with the station, that morning show, for about 25 years herself. And she wasn't sure whether to fully trust me or not, because for years, she and they had been the target of the kind of weird on-air pranks that we'd pulled over at Q104. And I had some splaining to do before she was able to fully trust me that... those things were all professional, and that even some of them I did regret. Some of them that had got rather personal in nature, I had sort of regretted. But she grew to trust me, and I appreciated that.
What's your relationship like with your alarm clock?
Oh my God, that's the one thing, the only thing I hate about this about doing mornings is, my God, you never get used to the hours, and I'm always tired. Matter of fact, I just woke up from a nap. So I'm a little foggy-headed. I get up at 2:55 a.m., 55, because I want to make sure I'm in front of the TV for the rerun of the news at 3 a.m. And so that's how my day starts. Yeah, and into the station, around 5-ish and on the air at 5:30.
4 o'clock Atlantic was when you scheduled this call.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, he's for sure having a nap.
That's right.
It's got
I've never napped so much in my life. Well, since I was a tiny baby, and now I'm napping like a child all over again. And man, they clear up the rest of your day. They take the fuzz out of your head for several hours, but then getting back to sleep at night, and it's a whole other story.
Did you ever think about leaving Halifax?
You know what? I've had some really cool offers, and there are a couple of markets I probably would have taken jobs in, and I never got offers from those markets. I got some good ones, though, and I had an opportunity to be closer to the majority of my family, and that was tempting. But I love Halifax so much. Halifax is my home. It's where I was born. I lived in Southern Ontario for 12 years and got exposed to some incredible radio that turned me on to radio in the first place. You know, like the old AM stations, CKLW was a station that I still spend a lot of time hearkening back to and listening to old tapes and stuff. And that got me interested. But coming back home to Halifax, you know, was there was such a bounty of opportunity here, and I just grew my career from beginning to end. And hell, Halifax has always been such a proud radio town. It was a pleasure, an honor to become part of it. It's so funny. It happens. You know this, Matt. It happens so fast that you go from just being the tiniest fish in a huge pond. Before you know it, you feel just like the same tiny fish, and you look back at your career and you go, holy crap, I've sort of become a part of this. And the people who were legends in the market, I love the fact that Halifax has given birth to legends such as, you know, Jer Bear, Jerry Lawrence, and Frank Cameron and Brian Phillips over the years. And these are guys that I just idolized, and I felt so nervous when I even spoke to them for the first time in my life. And now each of these guys I'm on a first name basis with, and I consider as friends. Maybe not Jerry Lawrence as much, but I mean, the times that we have talked, I mean, he's been so wonderful. But Frank Cameron, and I go to lunch with Frank, and he's a wonderful guy. He's still getting it done on a community station here in town. And Brian Phillips, Philly's just a wonderful guy. And just to be part of that group who made Halifax such a proud town to broadcast in has been such an honor, so overwhelming to me.
Well, if you can't locate the legend on the radio right now, it's probably you. Right.
God love you. Right. I mean, that's just weird because I was just a guy trying to get a gig, and it's the way it's been for 30 years, and I just sunk my heart and soul into a few projects and have always been surrounded by amazingly talented people. So it's been so easy for me, and it's just been fun. What a gig. What a great business to work in. It's just been so much fun, and I have no desire to leave it.
And that's the podcast for this week. The show has been brought to you by PromoSuite and the new cloud-based paperless studio, PromoSuite Next. Watch for CJ and Rachel at Canadian Music Week. See ya!
The Sound Off Podcast was produced by Evan Cerminski and recorded in the master studio of mattkundlevoice.com. Please rate and review episodes. It will help others find the show. To advertise on the podcast, email soundoff@mattkundle.com or download a rate card from the website and follow us and like us wherever great social media content is shared.
Okay, so the show isn't quite over. Here's a bonus bit of J.C. Douglas and the gang from Q104 talking about the two times they had cast members from WKRP as guests on the station.
We got a connection to another famous radio station through both the B.J. Wilson Morning Show and the B.J. Burke Morning Show, that being WKRP in Cincinnati, because B.J. Wilson and Harv and Lisa had Gordon jump in on the show.
Yes.
Once upon a time. Here's a clip of that.
Whatever happened to Gary Sandy?
Gary Sandy is doing live theater right now, a musical in Kansas City.
You're
really
kidding?
Yeah. Well, as soon as the show was over, he went to Broadway and did Pabst's version of the Pirate King in Pirates of Penzance.
Wow.
He's nice hoofer, pretty good singer, and all around good fellow on stage.
He's still in the biz.
Thanks
a lot for your call.
Okay, well, that sort of brings us to our next question. Do you keep in touch at all with any of the former WKRP co-stars?
Yeah, we talk to every once in a while. I'll get a hold of Frank Bonner and sometimes Richard Sanders, and we on occasion have an opportunity to visit.
Mm-hmm. This is your second or third trip to Nova Scotia?
My second trip.
Second. Former co-stars has a Nova Scotia connection, Jan Smithers.
Jan Smithers has property up here and is very proud of it. She considers herself a Canuck.
Ah, she was married here as well.
Yeah, she's even started going, hey, that's right, hey. He's wonderful.
Flashback to mind that Richard Sanders, he was Les Nessman, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He also did a stint here in Halifax, like on this property. He was at CJCH back in the late 70s. I think he was doing a tour of radio stations and went and did a little Les Nessman there for them.
Oh, really?
Who was the girl on that clip?
That was Lisa Blackburn.
That was before my testicles dropped.
Yeah. Now, this is May of 2003 when we welcomed... Gary Sandy into the Out of Control Room. He was with Greasy Gary and Darian O'Toole guesting on the BJ and the Q morning crew that morning.
Gary Sandy's here. Gary, welcome.
Listen, when I was a kid, you couldn't say arses and boobs. Well, what's going on? And here I am dressed in a three-piece suit and a tie, and you guys are in shorts.
Listen to this guy here.
You have no idea what goes on inside this studio over here, guys, out there.
Why they call it the Out of Control.
Now, listen, you know what I mean? Hey, what's the thing?
Greasy.
No, what'd you say to start off the sportscast with?
Oh, what's going on, laddie?
Hey, laddie.
He has no idea.
No, I don't.
It's your first lesson in Cape Breton-y.
Gibberish. It's a culture shock for Gary, of course. Just to people know the name, Gary Sandy, formerly from the television show WKRP in Cincinnati, one of the key players. You were the boss on the show.
No, I was a program director. The big guy was Gordon Jump, played the Arthur boss. Carlson.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. He was into CS a few years ago as the Maytag man.
Hey, listen, he's one of the nicest men I've ever lived.
He really
is a great guy.
Yeah.
But I was just good old Andy. What did I know? I just had hair and tight jeans.
You sure did.
Know, right?
Well, Darian here wanted to ask you about your package or something.
About my Darian?
She wanted to know if everything was real that she saw. Is this not the real deal?
You know, she wanted to know about your own tool.
It's just socks.
Do you have a part two to this to him?
No,
I had asked him if he had nailed Lonnie Anderson, and he wouldn't answer the question.
Yeah,
because that was the rumor.
Sure, he did.
Wasn't that the rumor going around?
No, that wasn't a rumor.
Like, it was true.
They were involved. Yeah, Burt Reynolds, I think, still wants to kill him.
Okay, he wouldn't answer the question. So
you know, it's funny because WKRP is more attached to radio folks than listeners might be aware. Like, there's a real kinship between that television show and the life that we've all led in our professional lives.
Because it was so real.
Oh, my God. People thought, oh, that's just a wacky comedy. It doesn't really happen that way in real life.
Oh, yes, it does.
Hello. But I remember going to a college interview to try and get into a college to take radio, and their question for me, I couldn't believe this in the interview, was, do you think that there's any parallels between WKRP and real life in the radio business? I had no idea how to answer it, but I think it made the difference. They didn't accept me. So, Mohawk College.
Mohawk. I got turned down from there too.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
Good decision by Mohawk.
Yeah, exactly.
Every radio engineer, whenever there's a problem, what do they tell you? Reboot.
Did it work?
The reboot seems to have worked.
I'm so sick of that answer myself. Yeah. Just power it down. Just power it down. It's like, really? Seriously? That's the answer to everything, is it?
Yeah.
Christ, I could be an engineer and I know nothing about technical stuff.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.